Yeah, okay, Matthew 25, verses 31 to 46. If you are listening to this on the internet, we didn't have a Bible reading. You have to Google Keith Green and the parable of the sheep and the goats and listen to a musical version of the reading. It's not a parable. It's a story couched in its strongest terms. And it occurs only in the Gospel of Matthew. Why does it occur only in the Gospel of Matthew? Could you give a hand on the desk? Thank you. Why does it occur only in the Gospel of Matthew? Well, Matthew was probably writing to the Jews. Writing to a Jewish context. And it seems to me that the writers to specifically to the Jewish Christians had their own outlook on life. James chapter 2, verses 14 to 19 tells us roughly the same sort of thing. What good is it, my brothers, if a man claims to have faith but has no deeds? Can such a faith save him? Suppose a brother or sister is without clothes and daily food. If one of you says to him, go, I wish you well, keep warm and well fed, but does nothing about his physical needs, what good is it? In the same way, faith by itself, if it is not accompanied by action, is dead. But someone will say, you have faith, I have deeds. Well, show me your faith without deeds, and I will show you my faith by what I do. It's the same sort of thing as Matthew is saying. Seems to me that within the context of Jewish Christians, this kind of teaching was very important. And Matthew particularly makes a case of including this story of Jesus to make the same point. Faith, he says, what does faith look like? What does faith in the Son of God look like? What does faith in Jesus look like? And it's important because he begins in verse 31 by saying, well, look, the end result of time, end result of life on earth is the glory of Jesus, Matthew 25, 31. When the Son of Man comes in his glory and all the angels with him, he will sit on his throne in heavenly glory. And all the nations will be gathered before him. And he begins to separate the people and the goats. Where does it come from? It probably comes from the book of Daniel. There's a good Jewish Old Testament sermon in this story. Daniel has a vision and he looks and he sees thrones were set in place and the Ancient of Days took his seat. His clothing was as white as snow. The hair of his head was white like wool. His throne was flaming with fire and its wheels were all ablaze. A river of fire was flowing coming out from before him. Thousands upon thousands attended him. 10,000 times 10,000 stood before him. In my vision at night I looked, and there before me was one like a son of man coming with the clouds of heaven. He approached the Ancient of Days and was led into his presence. He was given authority, glory, and sovereign power. All peoples, nations, and men of every language worshipped him. His dominion is an everlasting dominion that will not pass away. His kingdom is one that will never be destroyed, and he will divide the sheep from the goats. Well, actually doesn't say that, but within that context, it's this son of man, says Jesus, who divides the sheep from the goats. There's no fake glory here. It's real power to share and to divide. And to share his glory, you have to share his character. 2 Corinthians 3, verse 18, talks about the glory of Jesus. And we who with unveiled faces all reflect the Lord's glory are being transformed into his likeness with ever-increasing glory, which comes from the Lord, who is the Spirit. So how do we share the glory of Jesus? We share the glory of Jesus by sharing his character. That's at the heart of it. If you want to share the glory of Jesus, you've got to share his character in your character. You've got to be like him. You've got to turn into people like him. And if you're sharing that glory, well, you're sharing his character. And if you're sharing his character, you're sharing his glory. The two go together. So what about the followers of this Son of Man? What are they like? Well, they're rather more humble than you would think. He goes on to the story about verses 34 to 36. He separates the sheep from the goats. By the way, the The sheep and the goats were normally kept together during the daytime, often during the cold times, so I'm told in the commentaries, they were separated because the goats felt the cold more than the sheep, so they needed to be herded together a bit closer. Plus the fact that the sheep were worth more than the goats, so you tended to sort of keep them apart. But, by the way, we mustn't compare our Welsh mountain goats and our Welsh mountain sheep, because they're rather different breeds. The breeds of Galilee, the sheep and the goats, look very similar. And it takes a bit of sorting out. You've got to look carefully to see which is which. It's not easily done. But the sheep and the goats are separated. And Jesus turns to the sheep, and he says, "Well, you know what he says. I was hungry, you gave me something to eat. I was thirsty, you gave me something to drink. I was a stranger, and you invited me in. I needed clothes, and you clothed me. I was sick, and you looked after me. I was in prison, and you came to visit me." I have to say that if that's the case, Jesus' brothers are pretty poor people. They seem to spend a lot of their time in jail, in hospital, or hungry or thirsty. If the followers, the followers of Jesus, according to this, are actually humblest people on the planet for one reason or another. They're poorest people on the planet. These are not the rich who are running the world. These are ordinary people in their needs, in their situations. In fact, the early Christians pretty much lived up to that. The Apostle Paul, especially in 2 Corinthians 11, he tells us what his life like. It was like, "I've been constantly on the move," he says. "I've been in danger from rivers, dangers from bandits, in danger from my own countrymen, in danger from Gentiles, in danger in the city, in danger in the country, in danger at sea, in danger from false brothers, labored and toiled. I've often gone without sleep. I've known hunger and thirst. I've often gone without food. I've been cold and naked." So he kind of lives up to most of these in himself, with the lifestyle he had. And he sort of looks generally back in chapter 4, verses 7 to 10. He talks about the ministry of Christian leaders. "But we have this treasure in jars of clay to show that this all-surpassing power is from God, not from us. We are hard-pressed on every side, but not crushed, perplexed, but not in despair, persecuted, but not abandoned, struck down, but not destroyed. We always carry around in our body the death of Jesus, so that the life of Jesus may also be revealed in our body." They're the followers of Jesus. Suffer, struggle, and especially those who minister can be expected to struggle. And what are we expected to give to people? We're expected to give some food, a drink of water, clothes, and a visit in hospital or in prison. That actually isn't very much, is it, when you think about it? It's not asking too much of us to give simple basic things like that. It's an Old Testament sermon. Isaiah 58, verses 6 to 8, is probably at the heart of it. "Is not this a kind of fasting I've chosen, says God, to loose the chains of injustice and tie the cords of the yoke, to set the oppressed free and break every yoke? Is it not to share your food with the hungry, to provide the poor wanderer with shelter, when you see the naked to clothe him, and not to turn away from your own flesh and blood? Then your light will break forth like the dawn, and your healing will quickly appear. Then your righteousness will go before you, and the glory of the Lord will be your rear guard." Jesus preached Old Testament sermons. And this is an Old Testament sermon. To minister to the migrants, to the refugees, to the asylum seekers, to the poor, to the unemployed, to those whose houses have been repossessed. So the sheep and the goats is a good piece of Old Testament preaching. And then verse 41. "Then he will say to those on his left, depart from me, you who are cursed, into the eternal fire prepared for the devil and his angels." The lost then are more lost than you might imagine. The lost are more lost than you might imagine. The ultimate sentence then is separation from Jesus, described here as fire, eternal punishment. But the reality is to hear the voice of Jesus say, "Leave me. I have nothing to do with you, nor you with me." As I said, if you're going to share his glory, you've got to share his character. You can counterfeit a watch. You can, with a good photocopy, you can counterfeit a £20 note, I'm told. I've not tried it, but I'm told you can. You've probably got in your pocket at this moment a couple of pound coins that are counterfeit. They're far more common than you might think, and many of us actually have used them and traded them unknowingly. You can counterfeit handbags. I saw a program recently with a container full of counterfeit Huggies from China. You can counterfeit anything just about on this planet, but you cannot counterfeit saving faith in Jesus Christ. You can't counterfeit the true saving faith. Ultimately, it shows itself. Ultimately, he will separate the sheep from the goats, and you can't hide. Even the poorest have something to share. A cup of water is sharing with Jesus. The sheep are completely unaware, by the way, that they performed these deeds, which is why they're such good deeds. They were done out of the character. That's the good thing about them. They happened. They did them. They didn't realize they were ministering to Jesus at all. William Hendrickson, the commentator, comments on Matthew 7, verses 22 and 23, in a similar kind of context, where Jesus says, "Many will say to me on that day, 'Lord, Lord, did we not prophesy in your name, and in your name drive out demons and perform many miracles?' Then I'll tell them plainly, 'I never knew you. Away from me, you evildoers.'" And Hendrickson says, "This shows that there is in the kingdom of heaven room, plenty of room, for people who have not, in a technical sense, prophesied in Christ's name, have not cast out demons, and have not done mighty works in his name. In fact, for those who boast about such great achievements, there is no room." And A.W. Tozer, the great Christian writer, says this: "Before the judgment seat of Christ, my service will be judged not by how much I have done, but how much I could have done. In God's sight, my giving is measured not by how much I have given, but how much I have left after I made my gift. Not by its size is my gift judged, but by how much of me there is in it. No man gives at all until he has given all. No man gives anything acceptable to God until he has first given himself in love and sacrifice." God has chosen to minister to a lost world through you and me. And that will forever be our responsibility and our joy. That will be our crowning glory. And there are going to be many, many surprises on Judgment Day.